Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, the Stitcher Radio app for your smart device, CairoRadio.com, and the all-new Adore Network at Adore.fm. Let's get started with the episode. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 293 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. There you go. Boom indeed, folks. Boom indeed. We have got an absolutely packed episode for you. Once again, we're doing a split. We got somebody, some very cool people joining us for the intro of this episode, and then we're going to talk with a very, very awesome dude. A man behind the scenes of one of the most vibrant music scenes, and I would say one of the most vibrant music scenes in the world, right here in Seattle. It's a guy by the name of Steven Severin, and he's going to be joining us here in the backyard shortly. Talking about his life, how he got into being the co-owner of one of my favorite clubs in Seattle, Numo's. And it's a very, very interesting story. A little bit heartbreaking, and it's got a lot of twists and turns to it. And I think you guys are really, really going to enjoy it. Plus, we're going to be featuring music from his playlist today on the show. But let's do this first. Let's invite our two guests on. Let me turn their mics on here. And so joining me here in the studio is Tori Anderson and Chris Orlowski of the Chris Orlowski Band. Is that weird when, like, people say that, I'm asking Tori.
Yes.
Is that weird, like, they say the Chris Orlowski Band or Chris Orlowski, and you're sitting there like, hey, I'm in there too.
It's only weird because there isn't a Chris Orlowski Band.
It's just Chris Orlowski. I should know that. You guys have been on this show enough times. Like, I should have that in my memory bank.
We're thus far unnamed.
Maybe it's the whiskey.
Perhaps.
I don't know. Were you guys ready for me to start pressing record?
I didn't know there. I didn't know there was going to be this much dirty laundry air right off the bat. You know. Let's go. I should have drank some whiskey. I'm starting to realize.
Just shoot from the hip, man. Just shoot from the hip. welcome back to the backyard, you guys. God. Thank you so much for coming.
It feels so good to be here. It feels like I'm home again, you know?
Does it?
Yeah. I love this place, man. It gets the home improvements every time I come here. The
I kind of feel
better.
Like you're being sarcastic.
I'm not, actually. Okay, there's a little sarcasm, but not really. I do love it here, man. I always love hanging out with you. You know that.
And you saw the fence.
Yeah, the fence looks good.
The fence that me and Kevin built.
The groundbreaking, innovative
fence.
Dude,
right?
Yeah.
You can take the sections out, you guys.
It's removable.
So savvy.
I'm so proud of myself. I've never built anything like that before, like ever.
Oh, I mean,
I've never built anything before, actually. Never mind. I scratched that whole thing. Like, I had never built anything in my life, and that's a pretty fucking good-looking fence, right?
It's a great fence.
Like, the stain on the wood's really nice.
Kevin didn't help me with that, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, I had to do that by myself.
Was that post or pre?
He had to go, like, be with his family.
Oh.
Yeah.
Weird.
No, it was post. It was post. After gotcha. It was made, I stained it. Yeah. Yeah. Looks good.
Yeah,
looks
man.
Good.
So what's the deal? Like, what's the strategy moving forward? You can, like, take it off during the winter months then, or is it?
No, I'm going to leave it up.
You're going to leave it up.
Yeah. But it's just every plank is removable. Mm-hmm. Like, you can slide it out for people who can't see us right now or can't see the fence. It's like you can slide the planks up out of these slots.
So just the posts remain.
Just the posts remain.
That's cool.
And the slides. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. So it kind of blew my mind when you showed me. I know it's just a fence, but to me, I just thought
you forgot to nail it in.
I don't see that kind of innovation in North Seattle. Like, I, you know, like I would expect.
Chris is like, yeah, great fence.
Yeah, great fence. It looks like it's falling apart.
It's actually the name of one of our songs off our next album. Bringing it back. Yeah,
true looks story. Looks like it's falling apart or no. just falling apart?
Just falling apart.
All right.
A nailed right. fence.
Excellent, excellent. By the way, when does the new album come out?
Funny, you should ask. May 6th is when it comes out.
May 6th, so it's coming up.
Yeah.
It's Are you like excited about it?
About a month away. Yeah, so excited. We've been working on this for a year. So
a whole year?
Yeah.
So, okay, run me through this for a little bit. Because every time when I was playing music in bands, like we would book studio time to record something, and it was like a weekend, right? Like that's all we could afford. And it was a weekend, and then we would try to, you know, do as much as we could. We would practice as much as possible before we got into the studio. And then we would just do it in, like, you know, a couple of days. And it would sound awful. Like, it was just a couple of good songs, but mostly bad stuff.
Well, it sounds just like our process, actually.
Totally.
Now, I mean, there were a lot of firsts for us on this album.
Really?
Even though it wasn't our debut album.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I mean, like, I wasn't working doing anything else. I was just playing music, just writing songs.
Right. You actually quit your job. Like, you quit your day job.
Yeah. And then Tori and I, like, spent a lot of time in the studio with the other guys fleshing out the songs. I wrote, I think, 25 songs or 28 or 30, close to that. And then we pared it down from there to about 15.
Like, you pick the best out of
which we'd never done, like, that. That was a first for us.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. To really kind of pare it down that much.
So how involved, like Tori, how involved are, like Chris is writing these songs, how involved are you guys when you are in the studio? Like, are you basically like, you know, Chris, that one kind of is dumb.
That happens.
That shouldn't be on the record.
I mean, not as much as that, but,
but in so many words.
In so many words. In the past, Chris would bring the skeletons of the song to us.
Okay.
And then we would help with arranging.
Yeah.
And
everybody would like kind of write their own parts.
Yeah.
And things
yeah,
like that.
For okay. sure. Okay. And this is the first one where Chris really brought, a good chunk of the songs, co-written.
Okay.
And so that allowed him, like, efficiency wise, that allowed him to bring more songs to us.
Okay.
To then flesh out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was
so
fun.
So it's still a band operation. It's not like,
for sure.
It's not like Chris is Jesus.
No, I've never thought that.
No.
I don't think any of the guys
have
ever
thought It's not
too.
Like Chris is like that at all. I'm not under contract to say that it's not like Chris is like that at all.
Well, I'm docking Tori's pay for that. For not saying I'm Jesus.
Well, there's $5.
Yeah, exactly.
There's $5 off your paycheck. Sir,
yeah. I mean, $250. I don't think I'd go that far.
He's a sweet man. Yeah. He's a sweet, sweet man.
I try to be fair where I can be.
He's so fair. He's such a fair boss. Yeah, yeah. But you guys have been doing a lot. Like, Chris, you now do this thing at the top of the Smith Tower. Like, what is that? Like, once a month?
Yeah, once a month. Tori's actually done most of them too.
Have you?
Usually, yeah. For the most part, it's been mostly me and Tori doing a lot of them.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And basically,
and I'm sorry I couldn't go to the last one. Like, you invited me, you personally invited me to the last one, which I felt like super. I thought that was super nice. I was like,
"Well, you're a homie, dude.
That's so cool."
Yeah.
And then of course I could not go. Like, there are things going on in the background of the Roden household that held me here. So
yeah, I mean,
but it looked like it just looks like so much fun, and I've always wanted to go to that top, like. What is it? Is it an apartment? A condo? What is it?
It is a, well, from what I understand, it's a converted water tower housing space.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. It used to house the water tower
for the building. For the building.
Yeah. And then when they took it out, there was this massive, I mean, it wasn't being used for a number of years.
Right.
And they took it out and built a loft space there.
Okay. So for people who don't know, for people who don't live in Seattle, we've got a lot of listeners around the country that do not live here.
Do
so.
You?
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And around the world. Tori, woo. this air raid has gone international.
Amazing.
Friend. But for everybody who's not in Seattle, Smith Tower, I don't know why I'm stuttering right now, but I am. Okay, don't judge me. All right, hold your fire, internet. but Smith Tower was once the tallest building in Seattle, which is now one of the shortest buildings in Seattle. Like it was built what?
It was actually tallest building in Seattle, west of the Mississippi, until 1969.
Right. That's right.
Until the Space Needle.
It was the tallest building west of the Mississippi.
Yep.
And how many stories is it? Do you know?
37 until you get to the Chinese Room, and then there's a couple more stories after that.
So okay, probably, and then the one at the top, that's like what?
It's probably like
40 stories maybe, or 45?
I believe technically it's like level 38. The Chinese Room is 35. I've
been in that room.
Is it 34 or 35? That's the like.
That's the one you can rent out for like weddings and things
Correct.
Like that.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
It's cool.
But it's like sizable, and there's this really small little globe at the very top that you can climb these really tiny stairs and like
really
inch your way up into this little globe.
And
there's
it's glass?
A 360 review. Yeah, it's
no way.
It's scary as hell. Like, actually, the first time.
I am not a heights guy, and like I am actually going to ask you before you guys leave. I need to measure the width and length of my chimney here in the studio because water is coming through it and rotting the floor over in the corner over there. So you guys are going to have to spot me on the ladder.
It's a deal.
Is that okay?
That's totally fine.
Like everybody is super bored with this conversation. Just like, wow, we're talking home improvement and Smith Tower with Chris Orlowski.
We'll just
and
cut
Gordon
it out.
Anderson.
You know, we'll cut that spot
we'll
out.
We'll cut it all out. It'll be 2 minutes long. Yeah, yeah. So, but I've always, heights have always really, really like freaked me out. Like I don't like heights. But yeah. Is that the same for you? Is that like when you get up in this globe, like.
I think you get
you
used to
down?
It pretty quickly. Yeah, it's you can see like the whole city.
Wow,
it's insane.
That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Nice. And so you guys do these shows like once a month.
Once a month, and it's a great way for us to like really showcase these songs in the most intimate way possible. Because there's no stage, there's no amplification.
You're just playing
most
in
the
middle of somebody's living room.
Yeah, it's like a kind of a house show on steroids.
Yeah,
and the people that come are like the most attentive. Because they're in this amazing space where like in the clouds where everything kind of dissipates. So it's really special. And I bring a special guest every time as well. Dave Vizon, Alan Stone. Some really awesome people.
Really?
Yeah.
Dave's going to be in here in a couple weeks.
Oh, he's so.
With Andy Fitz.
He's so insane.
Which I'm super,
he's so good.
Super excited about.
Both those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Okay. So is it more nerve-wracking to play in front of a crowd like that? Like, I want both your answers, totally honest. Like, is it more nerve-wracking to play in front of, like, a small crowd in a room that is basically somebody's living room? Or is it, you know, more nerve-wracking to play the Showbox? Like you guys did recently.
I think it's, you know, for me, it's venues are more nerve-wracking because I can't control the sound. You know, when you're playing in the place in a living room, it's just that's more my scene, I think, because it's like you're kind of on the same level as everybody, and you're kind of there just to experience something together. Whereas when you're playing a venue, it feels like there's a little bit of a different energy, which is so fun, but it's just different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What about you?
I don't know. I get really excited for both opportunities. I think as far as the nerves go, it's a little easier in the house show type venue. But also when you're on stage, the lights don't really allow you to like
see
what everyone's reaction is.
Sure.
So you can kind of get in your own headspace. So there's actually advantages I see to both.
Are you kind of that person where like you get into your own head sometimes when you're up on stage?
People are hating this.
No, not that much. Okay. When I get into my own head, I just get excited and I go for it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right on, man.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah,
it's the best.
It's the best.
That's why I like you.
Thanks.
Because everything's the best.
Everything's the best.
But it's got to be kind of nerve-wracking, right? Like you guys played the Showbox, what was it, two nights? You guys do two nights at the Showbox, or was it just one?
Just one. That was a while ago.
What am I thinking about? You guys did a
Two Nights in the Sunset.
Was that what I'm thinking about?
I think so. In okay. February.
Yeah.
And then we did.
And they went really well.
Yeah, they went great.
Yeah.
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 Packed. It
you
was
guys
awesome.
Have been doing great.
Yeah, things are definitely on a good trajectory. It's just.
Do you think it's because of the Air Raid podcast? Is that oh, yeah. is that how I mean, that is was... that how you guys became so popular? I think that might have a part to play.
I don't even know why we're asking. I mean, it's obviously the launching point for our careers. You know,
we're back, aren't we?
Well, I'm excited, you guys. I am very excited to hear the new album, and it's great that you've been working on this thing for a whole year. And it's finally coming to fruition. Are you happy with it? Like, you happy with the final product? It's still doing, like, you're still mastering it right now, right? Or getting done with that, right?
No, so we've been done with the album since December.
Oh, actually, it's fully complete?
Fully mastered.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And
okay.
We did something a little bit different this time around in that a lot of different things we did this time. Actually, one of them was, since I co-wrote some of the songs, we reached out to people that I co-wrote with. And asked them if they wanted to do their own version of the same song.
Oh, cool.
And so between some of those co-writes, other artists, songwriters, and producers, we did a full second version of the album with remixes, alt versions, covers.
Yeah.
And it's insane. Like, it's Rocky Votolato's on there. Glenn Phillips from Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Whoa.
Maya Manzer locally here.
She's great.
She did its cover, and she sounds better than Lana Del Rey. It's insane, dude. I'll send it to you later, but...
please, I would love to hear that.
I just think it was kind of like an art experiment, you know, to see your science experiment. And, I think we've got something really, really great here. It's just a matter of trying to figure out how to release it in an industry that's, always changing.
Well, it's exciting it's going to be exciting to see how this does. I mean, you know, in my mind, Believer, your last full length did really well, right? Like,
yeah,
like that did good for you guys, right?
Definitely.
I don't know. They can't see you nod at home. Okay, so you need to say something.
I feel like I'm talking too much. I'm hoping Tori will talk more. I get
no, Believer was great. It was a fun process to get that, you know, Chris's first full length record out.
Yeah,
and tour on it and. Really see people's responses to it.
So can we say the name of the record? Like what's the name of the record?
It's called the new one. Often in the Pause.
Often in the Pause. I like it.
Cool.
Well, let's do this, guys. I thank you so much for coming and sharing this time with us and talking. Like, this is the problem with having you guys in here is that I'm so comfortable with you. It's just like, I've got my hands behind my head right now and I'm just leaning back in my chair. And, like, I'm just so comfortable with you now. Like, I don't even know what we talked about. Like,
we can talk about the fence. Let's talk about the fence.
It's good. Yeah. We can talk more about the fence.
We can't. We got to go to the first musical break.
It's true.
Yeah. So let's play something off the new record.
Okay.
Upbeat song. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
What do we got?
It's called Walking in My Sleep. It's the first single.
First single off the new record.
Yep.
All right, man. Well, thank you guys so much for coming back.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Always a pleasure. It feels good to be home again.
We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Save me.
A dim reflection of the one I used to be. Going through the motions. Inside, no longer feeling, don't know what's been moving me.
I haven't.
You don't ever do
it. I don't, no. Like, and I force myself to, like, listen to the shows.
Right.
You know, just to, like, take... I've been doing that for, like, the last, I don't know, 6 months. Because normally I would never listen to it.
Right.
And then I was like, you know what? We need to make it better. We need to, you know, continue on this track. You know, it's picking up steam. Let's continue doing things right. And so I was like, you gotta start listening to your own show
so you know what you did right,
right.
What people liked, what people didn't like.
Exactly, because we only get emails from people that don't like things.
Yeah, those are the people that have the biggest
fuck,
mouths,
man. You should see some of the emails. I didn't save any of them, but man, after Mark Arm with Mudhoney was on the show like a couple years back, three maybe 4 years ago, boy, did we get some fucking hate mail.
Why? What did he say?
Because I didn't bring up the drugs.
Did he want to talk about
no,
the drugs?
No, he didn't want to tell you.
Cares
no,
about
who wants
drugs?
To talk about their drug problem?
I mean...
You know, except for somebody that's, like, super open about it.
Right.
But, like, you know, like Duff McKagan, like, you could probably bring up drugs with him. He'd be fine.
Absolutely.
He wrote a fucking book about it.
Right. He wrote a book about it. He wants to talk about it. Mark Arm doesn't.
No. I mean, you could tell.
Yeah.
It was just like I get emails like that, and it's just like, fuck you, man. How's your podcast going?
That is right? So weird. Yeah, it's like, okay, you're so good at this. You step in and you do my job, and then let's talk.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I get that all the time. It's like,
do you really?
Why don't you book? Why aren't you booking like the White Stripes? And you're like, well, they're not really a band anymore, and they're a lot bigger than me.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's these other people that have worked with them before.
Right.
I don't know,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe that.
Yeah. I've never... This is the reason... Steven Severin joining me here in the backyard. Thank you so much for coming, dude.
Thanks for having
me. It's good to see you again.
It's nice getting off Capitol Hill.
Yeah, yeah. Coming all the way up to the woods, basically.
I have trouble crossing Broadway. That's literally like I live in a 4-block radius in my life. Actually, it's expanded to like 6 now. But
I thought you guys moved. Didn't you move recently though? You moved to like a new place, like a house.
Yes,
an actual
six,
house, right?
Six blocks away. 6 blocks away. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, people on the Hill, for people who don't live here in Seattle, Capitol Hill is kind of the hub of what goes on in the city.
Yep.
It's where all the good indie music is going on, the awesome clubs, and you know, it's where everything's happening.
Yeah, the art scene. It's good.
And it's like, but people who live on Capitol Hill, and we've experienced this in our own lives because we have got a lot of friends that live down there, they don't leave.
Yeah. Why would
for
you?
For fear of losing the parking spot. That's the biggest thing right there.
I don't even drive. I haven't driven since I was 21 years old.
Are you serious?
I've driven 10 times since I was 21, and the last time I drove, I actually backed my friend Merce's car into a bunch of 2x4s sticking out of
of a big flatbed truck and went right through her back window.
No way.
And I was like, really? I'm done with
That's
cars.
That's it.
See ya.
That's it.
I walk.
Oh my God.
And now we have a subway. So now I can get everywhere.
Yeah, dude, that's pretty cool. You been down to that thing yet?
I rode it 3 days in a row this last week to get down to like Pioneer Square, and had a show at the Triple Door the other night. Took it down there. It was awesome. It's the greatest thing that's happened in Seattle in ages.
Can we talk about the Triple Door show that just went on? Because we lined up a interview with Peter Murphy of Bauhaus.
Right.
I reached out to you to get to get some information. Thank you, by the way, because you're pretty much the reason that that went through.
Of course.
But I had to cancel.
Oh, no. Really?
I have never had to cancel on a big get. And that felt fucking weird.
What happened?
Well,
yeah.
You know what happened.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
it's called life. Life fucking happened.
Life really got in the way on that day. And it was just like, this ain't going to work.
Yeah.
But man, was I bummed about that and the other thing.
Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. Sorry we have to be coy around the subject, but, you know, it's been going on.
Yeah.
Okay. So you own Numo's, one of my favorite clubs in Seattle.
Thank you.
I have been down in the basement of that club doing this show probably the most out of every club in this city.
That's awesome.
And it's so nice down there, but man, you got to get some fucking air conditioning during the summer. What goes on down there, man?
Man.
Seriously, is there a boiler that you can't shut off or something?
In Barboza, we actually have air, and it's not bad. There's like a certain spot, if you stand under, you'll be like freezing. But
when you
put that many bodies in, it's crazy.
No, I'm talking about the green room. The green rooms, man.
Oh, the green rooms.
They're like hot.
Man.
It is hot down there.
Yeah. That is brutal.
Can we work on that?
Yeah, we are. We
okay,
are.
Good.
We actually are. We've talked about getting it in Numo's and Mobard.
Yeah.
It's so expensive. I'm crazy.
Sure. Well,
it's
these are
six
like
figures.
Super, super old buildings too, right? Like that's the point. It's got to be hard to do anything with it.
Yeah. We were talking about like people emailing you complaining about stuff.
Yeah.
I get that. Like it's about 12 days out of the year. You know, like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. You got to do something about this. And it's like, well, yep, we will. You want to give me $150,000 to get awesome air conditioning? Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's real money.
That's real money.
$150,000.
Yeah. I was down there interviewing Buzz Osborne of the Melvins.
I love him.
Really?
Oh, I love him. Yeah.
Man, I'll tell you what. I had a weird experience with that guy.
Yeah?
If people want to go back and listen to that episode, be my guest. you know, it's sometimes, and I'd love to hear your experience with it too. Like, and you don't have to name names. I am, but man, we had a great conversation off mic.
And then when the mics
turned on, it was like different Buzz.
Right.
And it was like, what the fuck, man? You're Buzz. Give me something.
Yeah.
Give me something.
I mean, I'm sure with him, he's done so many interviews, and he's had so many people take something he says and put it out of context.
Oh, sure.
It makes him sound like an asshole that he's like,
right.
I'm not saying shit to anybody.
Yeah. But he was the nicest dude.
Yeah.
It's just when I turned the mics on, it was like Clam City.
Yeah.
You know? And I experience that all the time. But this is what it is.
Right.
You know, it's me and you. It's just sitting in the backyard just chatting about shit.
Right. Well, the difference, like, if somebody listens to the podcast and actually hears how one goes, then they feel more comfortable.
Right.
You know, they know what it is. They
Did
know
you
it's
feel
not
comfortable
hardball.
Coming over
yeah,
here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
I was like, okay, cool. We're going to have a chat.
Yeah.
You know?
There you go.
Yeah, that's easy.
There you go.
But there are some that, you know, when I'm like doing stuff with, you know, pimping for the Sonics and, you know, on some talk radio and they're just like grilling you, like trying to do anything they can to get you to slip up. And it's like,
are you a baseball fan?
I like to drink a beer and chat with my friends at a game.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah. Me neither.
I like football.
I find it pretty boring.
Yeah.
I do like going to the stadium, so.
I like going to the stadium. Yeah.
You know, that's always fun.
Yeah.
It's always fun.
I mean, Roy, my production manager, Adazzotto is a huge baseball fan. Uh-huh. Oh my god!
I always see his post on online about it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he goes to like every game. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he doesn't care about basketball, so
yeah.
We don't talk. We don't talk that sports ball.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's get back onto the subject of music for a moment. You were telling me. You were telling me earlier, and we're not going to name names, but you guys recently had somebody in that you because you run Wake Up Presents as well.
Yeah,
which is a production company. You guys put together shows that come through Seattle. Yep. Doesn't matter what venue, right?
Yep, we do pretty much everything.
And you do well. Is it mostly hip hop? Mostly rap?
No, we do everything. I mean, we just had Peter Murphy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Triple Door. I've got Peter Hook coming up at the Showbox. God, what else? I should probably know what shows I have coming up.
We'll go through a list, too, at the end of the show, and we'll let people know what's going on.
But all kinds of genres. Charles Bradley I'm doing. Actually at Numo's. That'll
be a fun one.
Oh, love him. Dude. That sold out. I mean... That was,
Yeah.
It was going to be at Showbox, and Showbox ended up not having the date, so we were able to put it back at Numo's, which is awesome, because that's where I want to see every show.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's your place.
Because it's mine. No bias there at all.
No, none.
None.
But it's pretty cool, man. So you run all this stuff, and like I was saying, you had an experience with somebody, the other night, and I'm guessing that this happens on a semi-regular basis, where it's just like you know you're putting together a show and you have to deal with the people's people,
right? Well, so here was the interesting thing, like you said with Buzz, what I find is the longer an artist has been doing it. The cooler they are.
Yes, yes.
Because they know...
Completely.
You're going to get more out of me with sugar and honey than you are with smelling salts and a slap to the face.
Right, right.
You know? I mean, that's just the reality of it. And these young kids, they think they're rock stars and everybody should bow down to them. And... We act the opposite when that happens. It's just like, if you're cool to me, I'm cool to you, and I'll give you the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll, you know, we're always going to do exactly what we say. I mean, we all sign contracts. It's like, it's written there.
Yeah, yeah.
If I wrote it down, I said I was going to do it, done. It's done. Anything above that is all a matter of how cool you are to me.
Right, right, right.
And generally... People are pretty good. People are pretty good, professional.
How long did it take you to kind of learn that, though? Because it took me a long time.
Oh, God.
Like, I mean, it was a big hurdle for me to get over when somebody was being an asshole, like, to not be an asshole back.
Yeah.
You know? Like over email, too, because that's kind of like, you know, for something like this.
Yeah.
Right? You get a snappy answer on something like, hey, I'm fucking working on it. And it's like, okay, well, you haven't answered me in a month.
Right.
You know, so I'm just checking up.
Right.
I'm not trying to be a dick. We're just seeing if this can work out.
It's kind of funny because before I started in the music industry, I was the most chill, laid back, like West Coast guy there was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
now you're just fucking high strung.
Well,
and super mad all the time.
I'm back to the like chill.
Are you?
Mellow, yeah, I work really, really hard at it. But
sure.
Somebody that I worked with early on, I won't say names, but. Taught me my temper, was just always mad and angry and yelling at me. And so like I was like, oh well, that's what this thing is. I'm supposed to be mad and yelling and be angry at people. And I was like, why
do the tough guy thing to get your way?
Yeah, and that's stupid.
Okay.
And you know
it doesn't work.
It took a while to like actually, you know, figure that out. I think once I started working with Linda Dershang, when I went over to Chop Suey in like 99 or 2000, right around there.
Right when music was getting shitty.
Yeah. Yeah. I think our local scene was taking a dip. It was almost on its way back up, but it had taken a dip then. She really like helped me be a nicer person and, you know, realize it's not rocket science what we do. And the main thing, it's not saving lives.
Like, right. Yeah.
I had an argument with somebody as I was on my way to go to the doctors. and I walk in.
What year are we talking? Is this?
This is last week.
Oh, this is last week.
Last
okay.
Week. Yeah.
Okay.
Just going in for checkup thing.
Yeah.
And I walk into this elevator, and there is this doctor who looks like he's been in surgery for like 72 hours. I mean, he just looks destroyed. Yeah. I mean, he's got crap all over him, and he just looks so exhausted. And I'm what I was just like upset about is nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. Like
right.
We provide entertainment, something to do for people to come in and blow off steam from, you know, their busy day at work, their fight with their boss or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, I have to remember that. And I work really hard to try to remember that.
Well, it's easy to forget, man.
It is.
It's easy to forget. And I do all the time. And I walk back into the house sometimes and I'm just stressed as hell because I haven't gotten an answer back or something. A show's coming up. We're looking to book somebody. And it's just like, come on, come on. And it just makes you so tight.
Yeah.
You know? And then you walk back into the house and the wife is like, it's a fucking podcast, Aaron. You know, like,
exactly.
Like, chill the fuck out. Because when I started this 6-7 years ago, she was like, all right, we need to sit down and have a conversation. Because I know how you get.
I've had this conversation.
You're not going to be like this, right? And I'm like, no, of course not. You know, it's never going to go anywhere. I'm just going to have fun with it. Fuck, boom, go somewhere.
Right.
And now it's a business.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, got to keep it running, got to keep it afloat, got to keep it going, got to keep getting the names in here.
Yeah,
got to keep Steven Severin's not replying to my email fast enough.
Yeah.
I just shot you a look.
Yeah. I'm not the best.
No,
I'm
man,
not the
you're
worst.
Fine. You're fine. I was pitching you shit.
I do respond to every single email I get.
I do too. Even the bad ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I got to keep it in check, though.
Yeah. I have a script that I copy and paste. Like, band from Kentucky, hits me up and is like, hey, I want to play your club. I can bring out 10 friends. I'm like, fantastic. That's awesome. Seattle is great. Here's some smaller spots that you should hit up. And here's what you need to do to try to get a show.
Yeah.
Paste.
Yeah.
Next.
Right.
Takes me 10 seconds and they like respond, thank you so much, I totally appreciate that you responded to me.
Yeah. It means the world, man. It's super easy. Even when you just have to say no, like, you know, that's a thing that I've learned too, like turning people down is like, don't be the person that I hate.
Yeah.
That won't give me an answer or a solid one.
Yeah.
You know, to let it linger in your head. Like that took me a little while to figure out too.
Right.
It's like, don't be that PR person.
Yeah.
Like, that won't just say no.
Right.
Just say, hey, we're not into it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, moving on. You know, done.
Yeah. Don't waste my time.
Right.
And
right.
I won't waste yours.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? I say no more than I say any other word, probably.
Sure. Let's do this. Let's get into our second musical break. I want to see, Steven, what something on your playlist, dude. Like, what are you really hip on right now?
Ooh, that's fun.
We're going to have to cut out some dead air here for a second.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, I know. Anderson .Paak.
Anderson .Paak.
P-A-A-K.
Okay.
Oh, man, I love that. He put out a record pretty recently called Malibu.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, he's part of the, I don't know his officialness with Kendrick Lamar, but...
Uh-huh.
I think he's part of that camp.
Okay.
He has a little bit of a sound like him. Oh, man, love. That's probably the record I've been listening to the most lately far as new stuff.
Well, let's do a track off of that. What's your top track?
Let's see here. Anderson .Paak, The Bird.
All right. Cool, man. All right. So, Let's do that. We'll listen to The Bird by Anderson .Paak, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast with special guest this week, Steven Severin, owner of Numos and Wake Up Presents. Be back in a moment. Stay with us. I learned my lessons from the ancient roots. I choose to follow what the greatest do. A bird with a word came to me. The
sweetness of a honeycomb tree. And now I look what's taking over me. Couldn't fake it if I wanted to. I had to wake up just to make it through. I got my patience and I'm making do. I learned my lessons from the ancient roots. I choose to follow what the greatest do. I'm repping for the longest cycle. My uncles had to pay the cost. My sister used to sing to Whitney. My mama caught the gambling bug. We came up in a lonely castle. My papa was behind them bars. We never had to want for nothing. Said all we ever need is love. We see the same thing. We sing the same song. We feel the same grief. Bleed the same blood. You grew up in the home beside me. I always had a friend to call. How could I make it here without you? I pray I leave before you go. A bird with a word came to me. The sweetness of a honeycomb tree. And now I look what's taking over me. Couldn't fake it if I wanted to. I had to wake up just to make it through. I got my patience and I'm making do. I learned my lessons from the ancient roots. I choose to follow what the greatest do. A bird with a word came to me. The sweetness of a honeycomb tree. And now I look what's taking over me. Couldn't fake it if I wanted to. I had to wake up just to make it. I got my patience and I'm making do. I learned my lessons from the ancient roots. I choose to follow what the greatest do.
Good, I'm glad I aimed to do that. Yeah.
If this was later, well, no, you can drink on it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you can.
Yeah. Come on.
Okay. I mean,
fuck, I told you about when Eric Blood was in here.
Well,
like,
you were saying that, and I'm like, yeah, but you can't do
speaking
that.
Speaking of the mic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I can do that here.
Oh, okay.
There's no rules, man. There's no FCC.
I like that.
Fuck, shit, crap, cunt.
That's what FCC stands
that's
for?
That's what FCC
fuck, shit, crap, cunt?
It's FSCC, yeah.
Well, yeah, you know.
I'm gonna get 10 emails now.
Yeah.
I said the C word.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
can't
yeah.
Can't do that.
True.
Can't do that.
True.
That's what I like about Great Britain, is that the C word means something totally different over there.
Yes, true.
You know?
What's the deal? I was reading last night that David Cameron may be tied to the Panama leak papers.
What? David Cameron, the
Prime Minister.
Oh. I was going to say the movie director, but that's David Cameron.
Yeah.
Or James Cameron.
James Cameron. No, the Prime Minister may be tied to the...
What?
Yeah.
Oh,
millions,
dude, that's not good.
And millions, like, in offshore accounts.
That's not good.
Him and all his buddies.
Oh, man.
I mean, the Prime Minister of, what is it, Iceland or Norway, like, already resigned.
Really?
Yeah.
Man,
I haven't
been
keeping nailed
up.
Him.
I haven't been keeping up with any of this
stuff. Oh, man, it's crazy. And all these economists are just like, this is the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, this is, like, this
everybody
is
knows that this stuff
happened.
Goes on.
Right.
But you don't expect that it's, like, the president of your country is doing it.
Right.
Right?
You know what's happening, but it's like, oh, wow. No, really. Like, it's happening.
Yeah.
Like, how much money is just... Are these billionaires not paying because they're smarter and they have ways of hiding it?
And we let them get away with loopholes.
Yes. Oh, it drives me crazy.
So I think I'm on the... This is going to piss people off, too. I'm on the Sanders camp, dude. Like,
yeah.
I'm for him.
I mean, no
I
matter
like
who
it.
You're
I like
for,
what he's saying.
People are going to... I mean, I say I'm for Clinton, which I am.
You are?
People are going to be yelling at me. You should have seen...
Well, here's the thing. I don't care if it's either Clinton or Sanders.
I don't either. I'll absolutely back either of them. Happy with
I
either
would
of them.
I would love to see the first female president in office.
Yes.
Like that to me even kind of trumps a lot of the stuff that I like about Sanders.
Right.
Like just having the I think she's tough. I think, you know, I think she's a good person. She probably hasn't done some great things. But, you know.
Who has?
What presidential candidate has?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, everybody has skeletons in their closet.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
You don't get to where they're at without that.
Right.
I mean, Bernie does too.
Sure. Of course.
Just, you know, that's just how, it's part of life. You make mistakes. You can't be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I like that. I'm for either.
Yeah.
Let's get into you a little bit, buddy.
Okay.
That sounded really, I'm sorry.
Buddy.
No, let's get into you.
Oh, let's get into me.
Yeah, all I right. say buddy all the time.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why, but it's just there. I grew up in a very small town. So, you know, it's
Where'd
just
you grow up?
Indianola. You know where Indianola is?
Oh.
Around the Kitsap Peninsula.
Oh, I was thinking Indianola, Indiana.
No, there is one. There's an Indianola, Mississippi, too.
Huh? Okay.
But, yeah, over on the west side of the water.
Never been there. Know?
What? Yeah, you just did tell us that you never leave the hill, so.
Right, yeah.
Where did you grow up, man? Are you from Seattle?
I've been in Seattle 23 years now. I was born in Oakland, California, lived in Oakland and surrounding areas, Dublin, Pleasanton, for the first chunk of my life. High school, I moved to Arizona
and
lived in Chandler, Arizona.
With your parents, I'm
with
guessing.
With my parents, yep.
Why did they, what was that move for?
Get the heck out? Yeah, it was kind of get the heck out. It wasn't really super safe and, it was, I mean, we started with nothing. So, I mean, we grew up, you know, pretty poor and... in some dangerous places, but as the years went on and as I got older, my parents got, you know, a little bit better jobs here and there. Like my mom used to work at Oakland Coliseum when I was a kid, slinging beers.
Yeah.
The move to Arizona was partially my dad got a job and they knew they wanted to go somewhere. And so we moved to Chandler, Arizona, which is like 20 minutes outside of Tempe, and very few people have any idea what Chandler is.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's a pretty small, remote place.
Yeah, yeah. From there, I mean, I moved to Tempe, and then in 98, I moved to Seattle.
And why Seattle?
Seattle is a funny trip. So I knew I was leaving Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to go see George Clinton in P-Funk in...
Yeah?
No, 92. What did I say? 98. 92.
You said 98, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, 1992.
Okay.
Yes, 92. I was going to... I wanted to see George Clinton in P-Funk All-Stars.
Yeah.
In Long Beach, California. And it was one of their first, like, big shows back. And I was like... So me and my friend Tony Del Benes were like, all right...
This is when they were starting to tour again.
Yeah, they were just getting back. So like, all right, let's go figure out how to get some money, and then let's go. So we got the car and just slowly drove up the coast, went to Long Beach, went and did that show, hung out in San Diego for a couple weeks. I was thinking, no, maybe I'll stay here. And then I saw the bloodiest fight I've ever seen in my entire life. Got in the car the next day and left and just kept driving up. Like Seattle wasn't even a destination. We just kept driving, and we spent about 6 weeks between leaving Tempe and getting to Seattle. And I got here.
So you were just basically road tripping without really a clue of where you were going.
Road tripping with my clothes in a like hefty bag, garbage sack.
Sounds about right.
Couple cut off pair of shorts, couple sneakers, couple t-shirts, and then got up to Seattle. I knew one person.
Who was that?
My friend Diana Mavis.
Okay.
And then I met a girl. She convinced me to stay for a while. I hung out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Next thing
it's
I know,
it's always a girl. It's always a girl.
Always a girl. Next thing I know, she's like, "All right, this isn't working. Get out of my house." And I'm like, crap, I'm homeless. I'm in Seattle. I don't have any money.
Oh, no.
Teen Feed became my best friend.
Uh-huh. How old were you at this point?
I was 21 years old.
Okay. Okay.
So
you were having to go to, you were having to actually go to some of the like soup kitchens.
Yeah. And, yeah. Absolutely.
And food lines too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep yourself sustained here.
Teen Feed was amazing, man. Teen Feed was the coolest. Who is it that Megan Gibbard is the executive director there now. And I've talked with her a couple times and definitely have been able to donate some money to give back for all the free meals that I got. It's super important thing.
That's awesome, man.
I mean, that's whenever... I mean, I try to give back because I didn't start with anything. Now I have way more than I ever would dream.
Yeah, yeah.
And the two things that I hold dear to my heart is nobody should be hungry and everybody should have shelter.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have those things at
points
in my life.
And there, especially right now. I mean, like seeing that happen here in Seattle on such a grand scale is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I mean, 'cause I was telling a guy this... that doesn't live in this city, lives in the city that I work at, and never drives over here. And I said, take a trip and just go into downtown Seattle and you will see stuff out of fucking movies, like tents everywhere, like, you know, posted up along the highways and stuff like that. And it is getting crazy. And it's got to be because it's too freaking expensive to live here for low-income families now. Like, there's just no housing for them anymore.
Yeah.
It's either getting torn down and built up or, you know, it's sad.
And, I mean...
So sad.
Our climate brings a lot of people here.
Sure,
so yeah. it's easier... I should never say it's easy to be homeless. It's easier to be homeless in Seattle because of the temperate weather.
Right.
It's why it's such a problem in, you know, bigger cities in California
for sure.
Because of the weather.
Yeah.
I mean, but there's ways to fix it. It's money. We need to build housing for people. I mean, that's what we need to do. I mean, there's people that do it, obviously. Plymouth Housing. God, what is it that Michael Sewerath runs?
Oh, I'm not sure. I don't know.
He runs housing for homeless folks.
But
I mean, there's been lots of studies in other countries and other states that you save way more money, millions and millions of dollars, if you build housing and put homeless people in there.
Yeah.
And just give them the housing than having them be homeless.
Yeah.
Because of give all them the tools, services.
Give them the tools to actually succeed.
Yes.
Instead of like continuing to take it away.
Yep.
Right? Like that's the whole thing behind like sober housing and stuff like that. Or not sober housing, but like wet houses.
Right.
Right? Like you take a bunch of the drunks off the street, you give them a place to stay, and you give them a place to drink.
Right.
And... some of them become sober.
Right.
Because their life is now more stable.
Right.
You know? And it's, some of them don't. Of course, that's not going to happen. It's not going to be, you know, the...
Can't save everybody.
No, you can't.
But if you save
anybody... A person
anybody,
is a person.
Yeah. There's an organization called the Aloha Inn that wife worked with, and we did a fundraising campaign for them to get them a new kitchen. And it was amazing. We did a can list. The can list people.
Oh, my God.
So nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. They, like, donated. They pretty much donated everything to help them.
That's amazing.
Help them out to get a 60 grand to get a kitchen.
A restaurant like that would donate that stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
It was fantastic. Yeah. It's a really cool organization.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're very passionate about this.
You know,
along with the Sonics.
Yeah.
You're passionate about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But, like, back to when you were homeless.
Yeah.
Like, was that a... Tell me about that a little bit, because I've never been in that position. I've never had to go through something like that.
I mean, I wasn't homeless like you think of homeless people. Like, I spent time bouncing around on, you know, random people's couches.
Yeah.
I mean, it was less, it was, you know, basically about a month that I lived here where I didn't have a place. You know, I mean,
well,
yeah,
did you find
I slept like, outside a couple times.
Sure.
You know,
was it scary at all? I mean, for you, like, you know, I mean, I'm guessing that at 21 years old, your outlook on life is a lot different.
Yeah.
Than, you know, being in your 40s or your early 30s or mid 30s like me, like, you know, like my outlook at 21 was like, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, like
my outlook at 21 was definitely fuck it. I mean, my outlook at 21 was I got to get out of Arizona. I got to get my shit together.
Right.
I need to try and live a different life and get smart and, you know, just do something better.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw my stepfather under the bus on this one because fuck him.
Yeah.
At my wedding, my mom's going to hear this and she's going to hate this, but at my wedding, during the toast, he said, "We're so thankful and we're," and I can't remember the exact words, but it was something like, "We're so glad that we expected by the time Stephen was this age that he would either be dead or in jail."
Because of the time when you moved up here and
because
like,
of,
you know,
my youth.
Sure.
Like I did some dumb shit.
Yeah, yeah.
As everybody does, but I did some really dumb shit. But that was at my wedding. And that was the toast. Wedding. And all these other people up in, you know, you move to a different state because nobody knows about your past.
Right, right.
And so he just like throws all this out and is just like, "You bastard. Bastard."
I take it you didn't get along with this guy.
No, I love
him. Oh, really?
I mean, my real father was a bastard.
Yeah.
I mean, my real father was actually, he was a terrible man. And my stepfather was great until my mom decided that she was going to divorce him because he had some depression issues.
Uh-huh.
And then he went psycho and disowned me.
Oh man.
And I was like, "Wait, I got my shit together. Like I'm doing great." At the time, like I didn't own a business. So I was running Chop Suey. I mean, I had a steady check. I mean, things were great. I was like, "And now you disown me?"
Yeah.
Like you stuck around for the hard shit, and then when everything's, you know, going
so he basically raised you. Like I'm getting
him,
it that
and, yeah, him and my mom.
Yeah, that your real father, your biological father, was not around.
Yeah, I lived with him till I was like 7 or
oh, you did
8, and then my mom she had left them probably 2 years before that and moved in with my you know, soon to be stepdad.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I moved in with her and lived with them till then. And then my real father passed away when I was 12.
Is that hard?
I was really angry. I was really angry because he, I mean, he was a bastard. I mean,
you don't have to go into it if you don't want to.
Y'all are pretty smart out there. You can figure out why I would call him a bastard.
Sure.
This is kind of crazy, and this is the part where my wife tells me to stop talking because she's a media strategist.
Right.
But he had an open casket at his funeral, and I went up to it and just started beating the shit out of it.
Really?
I was pissed. Yeah, didn't like the man.
Yeah, apparently
he didn't
not.
Like me.
Yeah.
I mean, but I was a little kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So not like me, you know, I didn't really, wasn't like, "All right, well, I'm going to pack up and head over to Johnny's next door and have his family raise me," because that doesn't work.
Man.
Yeah.
That's intense, dude.
Crazy stuff.
That's intense.
Yeah.
But you made it out.
Yeah, man.
So why music? What drew you to music? I mean, like we said earlier, like, you know, you move up here basically on a total whim.
Yeah.
And you've got nothing. The music scene at that time, well, I guess 92, it was actually going pretty good here in Seattle.
For the local scene?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I probably didn't pay as much attention locally then.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really probably start paying attention locally until I started, like, actually working and buying shows when I started in 98.
Yeah. Okay, but, so that's when things kind of started for you in the music industry.
But I mean, I started seeing shows when I was 13.
Uh-huh. What kind of stuff? What were you interested in?
I mean, everything from my very first concert was Def Leppard on the Pyromania tour.
Nice.
With Uriah Heep. To seeing like punk shows. I mean, when I was in junior high, my buddy Roland Guzman, wherever the hell you are, thank you.
Yeah.
Gave me a tape with Fear, Suicidal Tendencies, and the Beastie Boys.
Nice.
And
that's a good mix.
And that's how I got introduced to punk rock.
Wow.
And from there, was just like Circle Jerks and just everything going from there.
Yeah, yeah.
Black Flag.
Okay, so you're into that type of music. When do you enter the music industry?
So
Chop Suey? Was that the first?
Rock Candy. Rock Candy.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I started.
That was the venue that I went to some of my first shows at here in Seattle because it was all ages. Oh, probably 93. Well, no. Let me backtrack on that. Probably 96 through 99.
Yeah, yeah. So I started in 98.
You were putting those shows together. The Delusions, fucking Built to Spill, man.
Yeah.
Those were the shows that we would always go to.
Yeah.
I saw Doug Marsh walking up the back steps because it had that raised area that you could watch the show from down. Just venue is just filled with fucking smoke. The bathrooms
disgusting.
Were disgusting venue. Everyone in the group, one person would get sick.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
And the bathrooms were always like, the toilets were always clogged. And it was just like, I'm sorry, I'm like talking about
No, this is great.
And Doug Marsh is walking up these back steps and he's like coming towards me and he brushes past me and I just go, Doug. And he turns around and stops and goes, yeah. And I go, I love you, man.
And he goes, I love it.
All right. And he just nods, gives you a thumbs up and then kind of, you know, goes a little bit faster.
Right. Yeah. Okay, fanboy.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. See ya. Good to talk. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, at Rock Candy, when we used to do punk shows, you had to line item a toilet because people would break the toilet every time. They would break the porcelain.
Are you serious?
They would kick it with their boots. They would take the thing that lifts off so you can get into the, you know, the back and the flush.
Yeah.
And they'd smash that. I mean,
what
every like
fuck?
Punk show. Oh my God, it's insane.
So what did you do? What did you do for the Rock Candy?
So I started working.
You were a
for
janitor.
Lori Lefevre as her publicist.
Really?
Yeah. So
what?
She came to me and she's like, "Hey, we were friends, you know, going to shows." What I mean, from 83 on, I went to shows all the time.
So you were meeting all these people. You were like, you were, you know, integrating into some sort of scene.
Kind of. I mean, I was always at the shows. I wasn't like really, you know, part of the scene, but I mean, I was at every show. I mean, I was just a music nut. Like I loved everything. And I went to all different genres. Like, my music is as wide as it gets, really.
Yeah.
If it's good, I like it. I don't care what it is. I mean, I'm wearing a shirt that
it's
has
a cross between the Grateful Dead and Black Flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that gives you the idea. I used to go to Grateful Dead shows wearing Black Flag shirts. Yeah, I was a hippie. A punk rock hippie, I don't know.
But, yeah.
I was too. I'm more of a hippie now than
kinda,
I was
we kinda, then. We kind of, yeah. I mean, everybody kind of goes through a phase, man.
Yeah.
I had a
yeah.
goatee and a ponytail.
Right. I used to have hair down to my waist.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Going to punk shows, going to hardcore shows.
I love it. Oh, my God. You ever find old pictures of yourself and just go, what the fuck?
So that's the weird thing is, like, there's not all the pictures because we didn't have them on my fucking cameras.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
so annoying. Like, I have so few pictures. Like, my wife has never seen a really good picture of me with long hair. Like, that's a tragedy. She should see that. So all you people out there that have pictures of me with long hair, send them to me.
I want to see these too. That'll be the fucking show, the show picture.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I've got some stuff. I've got some stuff on my Facebook.
You want to send me one, you know?
Yeah.
Get a good one. Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool, man.
But so like Lori was just came up to me one day and she's like, you're a fan of music, you know, can you write? And I was like, yeah, I've, you know, written for some punk zines kind of. Mm-hmm. She's like, great. I need a publicist. I was like, awesome. So I started writing, you know.
Do you have any idea what that even entailed, though? Like, what?
Writing press releases.
Okay.
No. She gave me an example of, you know, the format that they used. Yeah. And I was like, okay, cool. I can make this shit up, you know, do a little research. I mean, we had computers then. So, sure. You know, you could go on to, I can't even remember the names of the sites that would have all the bios, but, you know, go in there and take some stuff from the bios, uh-huh. write it up a little bit.
Sure.
I still have a stack of all of the press releases I wrote.
No
which
shit.
Which is weird. Like, I don't keep anything. Like, I'm not a hoarder, but I still have all of those, which is a bunch. And then 2 weeks later, she's like, hey, I want to go to Turkey for 6 months. I need somebody to learn how to run the club and to buy shows and to run the business. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. Sure. Why not? Awesome. And so I became her assistant and started
this
learning.
This is still at Rock Candy.
Yeah, this is still at Rock Candy. And for the last 2 years, I was her assistant. Still doing the pub, press releases and such. But, you know, I learned how to, everything there was to do with shows. And so I did that. And she never ended up going to Turkey because... Yeah. We found out like 6 months afterwards that they were selling the building to become a hotel,
right.
which is what it is now.
Right.
Some Homewood Suites shit or something.
Yeah.
You know, I got two and a half years of, you know, one of the iconic venues and some of the most amazing shows that you can ever imagine, like, playing there. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, she taught me, she gave me my break.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, even though the place was dirty as shit.
Yeah.
And even though it was really run down and, like, I mean, it was sometimes extremely claustrophobic in there that, like, whenever a show would end there, it would just be, like, a fucking mad dash for those for those double doors, which were not big enough to exit the crowds. And it was just like standing in line with people like neck and neck trying to like push each other out of these doors and just get some fresh fucking air.
Oh my God.
You know?
You talk about no air conditioning.
Oh my
Jesus.
God, man. I remember that place.
Yeah.
But man, some of my fondest memories.
Oh yeah.
Getting sick at the Rock Candy.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That was, like, one of the only places you could go, too. Like, that was an all-ages club here in Seattle.
Yeah, like, that was the big thing, is, like, she did all-ages shows with no booze.
Yeah.
I mean, the only place that does that now is Vera Project, and the only way that that happens is because there's funding for it.
So, like, through the Seattle Center,
I mean, she did it on her own without having booze, which you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Everything costs way too much.
Right. Just the liability insurance or something? Is that what it comes down to?
You know, rent and, you know, I mean, bands. I mean, you have to pay bands a lot of money, which when you split it up doesn't come out to that much money because they can't make money selling records anymore.
Right.
You know, if you don't get the Ford commercial or the Microsoft commercial and you don't get the publishing, you got to make money on tour, which is why so many bands will come 3-4 times in a year and you're like, really, you shouldn't come back for like a year, like you need to stay away, like,
but
we
they
just
can't
saw
not
you
do that.
Right, they got to feed their kids and pay their rents and you know, it's a crazy time.
So when did you take the leap? We're running a little bit long here, but I want to get to the point where you took the leap and actually started Numos. Like, when did you buy that place? Because what was it before? It was just Moe's, right?
So that place went through a bunch of different things. It originally started as Moe's Rockin' Cafe in 94 to 98 by my business partner, Jerry Everard,
okay,
who also started the Crocodile, although he jumped out.
Oh, like, he started the Crocodile?
He started the Crocodile Stephanie, can't think of her last name right now, and some other people. But he jumped out after a year differences and and opened up Moe's.
Okay.
Which, you know, that ran for 4 years. It was great. I never heard why it stopped.
Yeah.
Probably because running a business is really fucking hard. And then from there, it became Aerospace.
Aerospace.
Which was the
cool
dance club that my buddy, Alex Calderwood, rest in peace, who was an absolute genius, and Caroline Davenport actually ran. And that was such a cool spot. I saw so many cool shows there. I met my wife there.
Really?
That was actually, I met her actually at a First Thursday art walk.
Okay.
But we actually went, she actually almost asked me out because I had asked her out so many times. She told me no over a 6 month period. persevere, fellas. If she says no, just keep asking nicely.
Yes.
Nicely.
Stay outside of the personal bubble.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, Aerospace was great. And then it became a bunch of weird clubs that.
Yeah, that's like, what I remember. It kind of, it really changed hands quite a bit.
Yeah. And then Jerry Everard, again, who also owns the building, decided to open up Numo's. And a year and a half later, his business partner decided he wanted out. And Jason Lajeunesse was running it at the time. And Mike Meckling, I believe, was the bar manager at the time. And he went to those two and was like, hey, do you want to buy this? And like, yeah. And like, okay, well, we need to get another buyer. Like, we need to go get Steven Severin. There's actually one person that they offered it before. I won't say your name. Who turned it down. He's so bummed now. He wasn't really a booking agent. He's a rock star, actually. So I was running Chop Suey at the time. I'd been there for like 4 years and was, you know, my wife was telling me, you know, you need to get out of there. You're like, you're not liking it. I didn't like the owner. He wasn't running it.
It's time to make the move.
Time to get out.
Yeah. To make your own place.
You know, I had just invested in Liberty Bar up on 15th Avenue. And that was what I wanted to do. Like I wanted to open a little bar. It's just simple, good place to hang out with friends and just a nice spot.
Yeah.
And then gets a chance to, you know, you want to come by this giant club that's got a bar attached and a restaurant and another space underneath. And I was like, I don't have any money.
Yeah.
I can't do this. This is crazy. Went, sat down, had a meeting, was like, all right, yeah, I can do that. Absolutely. Let's go. And now it has been 11 and a half years,
really?
I think.
Yeah.
And
it's one of the best clubs in the city.
Man, I love it. I mean, we just bought a brand new sound system in August.
It sounds so good.
I used to think it sounded good. Now, since we went and like made that giant leap and wrote that giant check, it's like, oh no, now it really sounds good.
Oh yeah.
Like
you guys have it dialed in there, man. I mean, from everything from like seeing like Red Fang there to like seeing quieter shows, Deep Sea Diver I've seen play there. Like the sound is always so great. And you know, what I was gonna say, like Red Fang especially, they've been on the show a couple of times, so if you wanna go and hear some really funny conversations with the guys from Red Fang, go back into the archives. But man, I mean, at a heavy metal show, you expect to have to wear something in your ears.
Right.
Right. Being an older person.
Yeah. Yeah.
You like, okay, time to protect.
Yeah.
Right. Cause it's going.
It's going.
But man, I didn't even have to put fucking earplugs in show. It was like, it was so dialed in, it wasn't piercing.
Right.
You know? Which at most other venues, even arenas, it would be.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I will always say I've got the best team. Like my team, we've got 55 people that make those three businesses run.
Yeah.
Fish Fry went away. We're coming back with something new.
Okay, okay. Soon. You still have the space, so
still have the space. Yeah. Literally, yeah. Like waiting for my phone to ring and say it's done.
Oh, let's really? Go.
Yeah.
Cool.
New
cool.
restaurant.
Awesome.
Look for it.
Awesome.
By the time this is out, it'll be announced.
It'll be there.
Hopefully.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, man. It like our staff. It's crazy. I mean, they just.
You got a good team, man.
They work so hard, yeah. And they work smart. Like, yeah, we've got really smart people. And one of the things that I'm super proud of is that most of the people there in the office and running, like, the actual production and booking the shows, so many of them started as interns.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool, one of the most proud things one of the most proud things I am of. That doesn't sound right. One of the things I'm most proud of.
There you go. You got there.
There it is.
You got there.
Is,
this guy owns a fucking business.
He can't speak. It's a rock and roll business. That's why.
That's right. That's right.
Is I have had the best luck with interns going on to do
that's
killer
great,
stuff.
Yeah.
Killer
yeah.
stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, everybody, you know, now. Most of the people, nice. Most of the people that I've worked with at your venues have been security because I'm going in there, you know, before the show starts and doing interviews and stuff like that. And everybody's been so fucking awesome, dude. I got to hand it to you. You really know how to pick people out. And you know, your venues, you set it up with people who really know how to put together an awesome show, an awesome lineup, you know? So
thank you.
I got to hand it to you, man. It's one of my favorite venues. You've got an amazing story of how you got there and congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Totally. Steven Severin, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure. Wow. What a story. Oh my God, man. I could have gone on with that conversation for so much longer. And by the way, big thanks to Steven for coming on the show. Big thanks to Tori Anderson and Chris Orlowski of Chris Orlowski. I keep on wanting to say band after it, but it's just Chris Orlowski for joining me for the intro. Packed episode, man. What an amazing story. What an amazing story Steven had about where he's gone. And how he got there. Absolutely insane. We did have to take a bunch of stuff out of that episode because we ended up talking about the Seattle Supersonics and bringing them back for going on like 20 minutes. And I had to keep some sort of... This episode would have been like 2 hours long if I left some of this stuff in. So I apologize to... personally apologize to Steven Severin. I know he's very passionate about the Seattle Supersonics and getting them back in town. And he played a big part in getting this rally together that brought together like thousands and thousands of people into the streets of Seattle. I could not leave it in. I couldn't leave it in. Plus, it's a music podcast, right? Not a sports podcast. Anyway. All right. Upcoming shows for Wake Up Presents, which is owned by Mr. Severin. Let's see. Dej Loaf. I hope I'm saying that right. Going to be playing at the Showbox Soto here in Seattle on the 26th of this month of April. Let's see, one that I'm very, very excited about, another one coming here to Seattle, Cool Keith, a.k.a. Dr. Octagon, April 27th at Nectar Lounge. Get your tickets right now. If you'd like to find out more about Wake Up Presents, you can go to their Facebook page. Just type it into the search bar. If you'd like to find out more about, you know, the places that he co-owns, Numo's, Barboza, Little Woody's Burgers, you can find that all on the internet as well. And there's a ton of, I mean, amazing shows. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, one of my favorite venues in this city. So big thanks to Steven for making the trek up here and talking with me a little bit. Upcoming shows for Chris Orlowski. You can find out more about Chris and where he's going to be at chrisorlowski.com. We'll put a link to that at air-raid.net. Let's see, 22nd of April, once again, Yakima Sports Center. He'll be there with the full band, I believe. And Saturday, 23rd of April, Main Street Studios in Walla Walla, Washington. The 29th of April, Green Frog, Bellingham, Washington. And then on the 30th at Studio 524 Sandpoint, Idaho, and on it goes. So go to chrisorlowski.com, check that out, and we'll go from there, all right? Okay. Thank you so much for listening this week, everybody. We had a great time chatting with you. And if you'd like to find out more about some of the chats that we actually talked about during this episode with Steven, you can go to our website or to our Spreaker page and listen to the archived episodes there with people like Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses, founding member of Guns N' Roses, Chris Walla of Death Cab for Cutie, Mark Arm of Mudhoney, Mike McCready of Pearl Jam, I mean, Taco Cat, Emily Noakes of Taco Cat. They're doing amazing things right now. Deep Sea Diver, all sorts of great, great stuff. Aisha Tyler, Bob Saget, Jim Brewer, Scott Aukerman, Mike Birbiglia, Pete Holmes, man. Yeah, Pete Holmes. Eddie Pepitone. I'm staring at this poster that he signed for me. Oh, man, he's been on the show a couple of times. It's been a great run, folks. So go to air-raid.net. You can access the archives tab right there. And you can also subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. It helps us out quite a bit, gets us better standing in the standings, for lack of a better term. I know there is a better term for that. I'm just not saying it with my brain. We're also available on Stitcher, TuneIn, and the Cairo Radio apps, and now on the Spreaker app as well. Or just visit air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com, the Air Raid Podcast. Or follow us on Twitter, and follow us on Twitter, at Air Raid Net. Or email me directly if you'd like to tell me something about the show. Please keep it, you know, keep it nice. Keep it nice. Email me directly, aaron at air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody about this show. Bring it up in conversation. Subscribe your friends to it while they're not looking. Maybe they'll like it. All right? That's the whole point. And it's not illegal. You can sign somebody up when they're not looking. You can steal their phone. You know, take it for a, keep it for a week. That's probably illegal. Don't do that. All right, we're going to close the episode with this song by Anderson .Paak. This is, I had never heard Anderson .Paak before this episode, and now, thanks to Steven Severin, I am completely, completely obsessed with him. This one's called Heart Don't Stand a Chance, and we'll be back next week with an all-new episode of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a great week.
Spinning the greatest hits of Harlem notes, open up chronic smoke. I know my time will flee, but your heart don't stand a chance. It feels like it's been far too long. The moment is all that we have. My meter should be up by the half. A ticket is the least of my cares. So let me ask you, am I dreaming? Mine on the tip of a cloud. Is it real as the stone in your crown? See, ain't nobody towing my jack. Don't it feel like it's been far too long, girl? Your heart don't stand a chance. I'm waiting for the white flag. You're talking with the blunt in your hand. Hey, won't you pass that? I know in the morning, the sunlight cover your wounds. But I'm hoping that I look the same as the way you always knew. Baby, of course I flew, but I'm not over what we had. Don't it feel like it's been far too long, girl? Your heart don't stand a chance.